Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers, the only dedicated lifestyle group within Random House. Potter invites readers to live well. We seek tastemakers, visionaries, and rising stars and partner with them to craft books and products that define their brand while engaging, entertaining, and instructing their audience.
And this week's featured book is The Hand-Built Home by Anna White.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, I'm Grace Bonney, and you're listening to After the Jump on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can listen every Monday at noon, and today we're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I'm very happy to be joined by my partner in crime, otherwise known as Amy Azzurrito, the managing editor of Design Sponge, the blog I've been running for the last 8 years.
Yay, hi.
Thanks for coming, Amy. Thank you.
Yes. Hi. I'm awake. Promise.
So Amy's joining me today because we're talking about something that the two of us have had a lot of experience with. Both Amy's got an academic background as well as blogging, and me with blogging and writing for magazines. We are talking about finding your creative voice, finding your place in the creative community, and then how to hold on to that place and the inspiration you'll need to keep you there for years. And we started thinking about this for a couple reasons. We get emails from people on a regular basis about how to turn their passions or their ideas into whether they're websites or new projects, and we end up sort of giving the same advice, so we thought we'd sort of have a conversation about that today. And Amy brought up a good idea about sort of how this whole concept represents like raising your flag on the internet.
Right, yeah. I said you can't expect someone to knock on your door and say, hey, you have this special thing, tell me about it. You really need to sort of put up the flag and say, this is what I know about, this is who I am. Here I am. And then people, give people something to find. Give them a beacon. Be a beacon for
you. Exactly. So today we're going to tell you how to do that. We're going to break it down into a couple steps. And then we're going to break it down even further, talking about how you sort of find inspiration and then how you keep that over the years. And I think that's something that's incredibly relevant right now, because I feel really strongly like in terms of the blogging community, there's sort of like this old guard, new guard shift happening right now. And to sort of maintain relevancy and inspiration, whether you're a blogger or just an active member of the creative community, is a challenge. And the community is very different than it was back when I started in 2004. It's a completely different community of writers, readers, and sort of what's important. So the first thing we're going to talk about is finding your medium, because I think originally back in the early 2000s, the only option felt like having a blog. Like that was what you do. You have something to talk about, start a blog. But there are lots of options.
Right. So do you want me to talk about blogging?
Yeah, why don't you talk about blogging? I think that's the still the first thing that people think. I have an idea. I'm going to make it an online website.
Right. And I'm still, this is my first advice to anyone who is looking for a way to raise the flag, basically. And I think it can seem like a very difficult thing to break into if you don't already have a blog, because there are so many established blogs and it feels like everyone has a blog. But I think it is a way for people to find you. So if Grace and I are looking for writers, oftentimes that's what we're looking at, other people's blogs, and it's really your calling card. So I do think it still is a great first place.
Well, it's the cheapest and easiest one too. The other avenues obviously are thinking about whether or not your voice fits best into print, whether it fits into something like a podcast or a radio, something that's audio, whether it's something that you want to do in person, like a meetup series, or you want to start a shop or some sort of guild or group like that. I mean, every different project has its own best medium. And I think for me, the best way to sort of figure out which one it is think about finding your best frequency of communication, because blogging is really something that I think benefits from regular posting. Right.
The one thing I like about blogging is it's a great way to showcase your aesthetic sensibilities, even if you might not have design skills. So I personally have a very refined idea of what I like and what I don't like, but I could not design it. I could not do it. But a blog lets you showcase that without having to, you know, be in Photoshop or do something.
You don't
really
have to lay out a magazine, you don't have to lay out a newspaper, you don't have to like learn podcasting skills. Like it's sort of the easiest, fastest way to get out there.
Yeah.
So before you're thinking about what your project is, the first thing to think about realistically is how much do you feel like you can commit to this? Do you want to write every day? Do you want to write every week? Do you want to write once a month? Whatever that form of communication is, pick something that's the best for that. You don't have to force yourself into any of those mediums that don't work for you. Mm-hmm. So once you've picked the best way to share your voice, you have to figure out what your voice is. And I think right. this is honestly a skip or a step that most people skip over completely, because I think everyone assumes you talk with your friends, you talk with people, you have a voice, you know what right. it is. But the way you communicate and present yourself online is actually very mm-hmm. different than that. So I think the first thing to do is to focus on what makes your interests or your background different from everybody else. Right.
And I was going to read, I got an email actually just perfectly timed last week. And I'm going to read just a little excerpt from it. And the reader said, "I'm a recent MA graduate in art history from the University of New Mexico. My thesis explored the historical production of textile manufacture in the U.S. I fell in love with and became extremely passionate about textile design, an interest that has spurred and nurtured my passion to sew my own quilts and fiber objects. I am in pursuance of gaining experience in editorial work that would speak to my passion for design, art history, writing, DIY projects, and home decor. That said, where and how do I begin?" I think we can get this question a lot.
Well, and it's funny because that email listed like every possible topic or like subject area a blog could have. And that's right. the difference. Like when you're talking about raising that flag, like that flag needs to be a little higher than every other flag in order to stand out. And those are all topics that I think everyone shares, which is great. But how do you make those things different? I think the first thing to do is to really honestly look at like, what are the things that make mm-hmm. you different? And it could be as simple, like I'm a big fan of regionalism and sort of figuring out, are you a blogger in Manitoba? Like, are there a lot of bloggers in Manitoba? Are there people sort of raising the flag for Canadian blogs? Like, I think you have to figure out what makes you different and then celebrate
yeah.
that.
And I would love the idea of someone doing like a Mr. Rogers, this is my neighborhood mm-hmm. with design. I mean, that could be your whole focus. Yeah.
And the same thing goes for whether you don't want to be a blogger, but you're just mm-hmm. a maker. You're somebody who's a ceramicist. You're a fine artist. Those things that you can celebrate online that make you different from sort of the other crop of artists or the other crop of writers are going to instantly make your flag stand out a little higher mm-hmm. than everybody else. And if you look at your work or you look at your writing and you say, okay, well, I live in New York or I live in San Francisco, how do I stand out in mm-hmm. a sea of people? I think one of the best ways to do that is to have sort of a core mission or a goal that really sets you apart. And this is something I struggle with and I've been dealing with, and mm-hmm. Amy knows this really well, because this is something that's going to change over time, but you have to sort of put it in stone when you start a project, because whatever your core mission and your goal is, like, you're going to constantly come back to that.
Right.
And it's going to keep you on mark for what you talk about going forward.
Right. So even if you like, you know, for this person, even if she loves food and she's a real foodie and goes out to eat all the time, that might not want to be the thing she writes about on her blog. She would want to focus then just on textiles, which is what I told her to do, not write about, you know, the intramural soccer team. I don't know, can you do that if yeah. you're not in college or whatever, but whatever, the soccer team. I yeah. don't know if intramural is only college.
Well, sorry. I think it's difficult to start a blog or any creative project when you're trying to have your hand in like 10 different areas right. at the same time, but to sort of focus on the two areas you have that are different. And one thing that I think is kind of unique, and you have this mm-hmm. and nobody else in our staff does, I think, is like you have multiple MFAs, and that's something that should be celebrated, and sort of the skills that you have from your professional background, whether it's educational right. or a skill you have from another job, are a great way to set yourself apart.
Well, and I think just trusting that those things that you have, and we're going to talk more about this when we talk about inspiration, but those things that you have that sort of formulate your background, you don't have to talk about every one of them all the time. Mm-hmm. I have a degree in library science, and I don't talk about that actually very much. But I would say that it informs a lot of what I'm doing just by virtue that I spent a lot of time thinking about that.
Exactly. But if you were someone who came into it and said, I have a degree in library science, I also like DIY, home decor, right. blah, blah, blah. If you were to frame that website as like librarian talking about blah, 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 or like how you bring your mm-hmm. librarian background into that, you would instantly stand out way more right. than like, hi, I'm Amy. I have a home decor blog.
Right.
So I think that's exactly. a good thing. One last note in terms of finding sure. your voice is really to sort of try to resist the sway to speak with someone else's voice. I think the hardest thing to do when you're starting a website or a new creative project is you're naturally going to research. You're going to look at what else exists out there. And it's really difficult to notice what's sort of popular in whatever your niche mm-hmm. is and then try to squeeze yourself into that. When I started, like, political blogs were all the rage, and I was obsessed right. with the blog Wonkette, and she was like really saucy and would call people out, and I was like, hey, that's how I'm gonna talk. And so I would call people out, and that is not I mean, maybe that's how I am in real life.
And I don't think you are. You're sweet and southern.
But I think in terms of trying to force yourself to sound like someone else, it's a terrible idea. So really just accept your voice how it is and trust that, like, if you're speaking from your heart and you're speaking from the way you really are on a day-to-day basis, people are going to gravitate towards that who want to hear that. There's really no need to, like, force yourself to be what you think is popular because, again, they've already got other examples of that. They don't need another... sassy design blog.
Or, and also, like, you know, building off that is not allowing yourself to be too influenced by the comments or lack thereof that you get on your site. I did a before and after on the site that still kind of hurts me to the core, where everyone hated it, hated this project. And it's still hard for me to actually look at this piece of furniture that I loved and is in my house, but everyone hated it. And it's hard to sort of not let that, or if you don't get a lot of comments on a post, to be really bummed out by that.
I think that's honestly the hardest thing, but it can't be a positive thing. Like, not getting a lot of reader feedback might feel painful at sometimes, but in the beginning, it's actually kind of a blessing, because when you're trying to figure out your voice and figure out the best way to communicate, it can be nice to not have so much immediate feedback of, like, I don't like the way you say this, I don't like the way you do that. Sometimes it's nice to create in a vacuum and give yourself some time to, like, ease into finding your groove.
Yeah, no, it's so true.
All right,
turn off your comments.
Never a bad thing to turn them off when you're starting out. So we're talking about voices, we're talking about finding a medium. I think the next obvious step is really to talk about how to find an audience for what you do, whether you're a blogger, whether you're a maker. You've got to eventually find somebody to pay attention and support what you do. So I think, and this is interesting for me, mainly because this is completely different than the way I think it used to work when I started in the early 2000s. I think, honestly, all you had to do was exist, because there weren't a lot of like design options on the web, and you had to just, like, comment on one other person's blog, and all of a sudden people were like, oh, there's another home blog, and that was it. That's all you had to do. But now
that is not the case.
It's not the case anymore. You have to, like, really raise your hand and wave it around really, really wildly. So I think one of the best steps you can do is not only to participate in comments, which has always been the thing, but to participate in social media. I've found more interesting websites and people, just regular bloggers or makers, just through Twitter, through Facebook, people who use Instagram, and all the things that I know are very of the moment, but they really are sort of like a very quick edited way to find people. And if you can find a way to integrate any social media platform, it doesn't have to be all of them, but just one of them, into your daily communication, I think it's a very quick way for people to find you.
And what do you think, because sometimes people can participate in comments and do it in a way that feels spammy.
Yes.
So how do you do that and not have it feel like you're spamming other blogs with your URL all the time?
There you go. The rule of thumb is don't put your URL in the comment. And I know a lot of bloggers just flat out prohibit it. I mean, I'm one of them. I think that every commenting section provides you a URL to include for your business, for your blog, whatever it is. Use that. If you really strongly want to be, like, identified as your business, then make your commenting handle your business. So if I really want to just be known as my blog, I will just comment at Design Sponge and not Grace. And it's like those fields are provided for you. When you add them in, it just feels like you aren't really saying anything. You're just constantly handing someone a business card.
Do you think it's okay to add a link to your site if it's related?
I think if it's related and it's not always what you do, like, I find it interesting when someone comments only to say, like, hey, you wrote about cake, I write about cake too. Or you wrote about making paper flowers, I also write about paper flowers. Like, if every comment is about driving things back, I feel like, yeah, you can do it all you want, but I feel like what you do is you get a reputation as being a little self-promoting. And there's a difference in, like, being an active communicator and a member of the community, and then being someone who's just shoving something in someone's face. So I think be an active commenter in terms of, like, just really reading what somebody has to say and adding legitimate conversation to that. And if you don't have legitimate conversation to add, then just don't comment on that website. Why don't you talk? I think this is interesting for you to talk about, like, the blogging for other websites. You've got experience on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as collaboration or,
writing for other websites. I think that's how you got into
that. How I started. I actually started blogging. I was reading a lot of blogs and realized that I had like 300 home blogs on my reader. And I was like I was also in grad school studying design history, and I was taking everything in, and I just needed a way to let it out. But I was too nervous to start my own blog. So I entered a contest for a blogger on apartment therapy, and that's how I started. I won the contest, and the prize was I got to blog 7 times a week forever. But I think writing for other sites is a great way to collaborate, find other readers, and even just reaching out to a site you really like and saying, hey, you write about weddings, and, you know, for my textile person, what would you think about a post on Moroccan wedding blankets, or what would you think about a post on unique textiles and wedding decor or something like
that? Exactly. And you can dream big for stuff like that. I think a lot of people think like, oh, I could write for a blog, but really, I mean, I've been really struck by how the New York Times like has a style blog, you know, like a group of people now who write. And there's a photographer, Io Tillett, who's from New York, who's sort of young and cool and, you know, there's all the hipster people. And she writes a blog for them now. And I remember when I first saw that, I was like, I've only heard about her in like hipster publications in Brooklyn. And I couldn't believe that like she was writing for the Times now. But she represents and knows an awful lot about a very specific niche in New York and photography. And so I think if you have something interesting, and especially if you've got like an educational background to back that up, why not aim big and try to see if you can get your foot in the door somewhere big.
Well, and you can also, if the New York Times doesn't work out, I mean, you can also try a local paper or local publications and write about, you know, if your local design scene for a print publication or even for their online site.
Exactly. It all helps. Getting your foot in the door anywhere is always sort of the first thing you need. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dive into the big topic that is inspiration.
Hey.
Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers. This week's featured book is The Hand-Built Home by Anna White. Create a beautiful modern home with one-of-a-kind DIY furniture. Beds, organizers, Adirondack chairs, a play table, and more. It's easy to build inexpensive quality furnishings with this indispensable collection of woodworking projects from Anna White, the popular blogger who's inspired millions of homemakers with her stylish furniture plans and DIY spirit. As a young mom on a tight budget, Anna learned to make her own well-designed pieces inspired by the styles in her favorite stores, saving thousands of dollars in the process. Now, in this reference for woodworkers of all skill levels, Anna shares everything she has learned along the way. Inside the hand-built home, you'll find plans for 34 versatile furniture projects for every room in your house, from beginner-friendly home accessories to sturdy tables, a media center, kids' items, and storage solutions. Comprehensive information on using off-the-shelf lumber and basic equipment. Almost every project can be made with a drill, a saw, and some hand tools. Easy-to-follow instructions, costs, and time estimates to guide even the most amateur of carpenters through any project. You don't need to be physically tough or super strong to make your own furniture, and it's okay if you don't know that a 2x4 actually doesn't measure to 2x4 inches. All you need is the determination to create a better home for yourself or your family, and the confidence to say, I can build that. The Hand-Built Home by Anna White. Available wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm speaking with Amy Azzurrito, who is the managing editor of Design Sponge, which is the website that I run. Today we're talking about finding your creative voice, finding your place in the creative community, and then how to sort of keep inspiration over time. So before the break, we were talking about finding your voice, finding the right medium for whatever your creative passion is, how to get readers. Now we have to talk about inspiration.
Yay,
which
this is my favorite.
I think seems like people assume that inspiration would be the thing that you can just easily find. It's the thing that makes you first have a passion, but can be difficult to keep over time. So let's talk about the ways that we find inspiration, how we organize it. Let's start with you, Amy, because you have a more traditional source.
Right. And mine is, I mean, I do have that degree in library science, so it's probably no surprise that my source of inspiration is books. But it's not as easy as it sounds to find a book that speaks to you. So I sort of spend a long time. If I find a book that I really like, I'm like looking in the back for selected readings, looking at the bibliography. I'm looking on Amazon for other suggestions. I read the New York Times book review and look to see what design books they suggest. So I'm really, I feel like I'm always looking for something new to read or something new to inspire me.
The nice thing about that, and this is sort of a sad statement on the blogging community, and I'm exactly one of those people, is that not everybody really goes back to books anymore. So right. I think that the things that you're finding as sources of inspiration are very different than what other people are finding. Because, for example, so I find my inspiration online from magazines, but those are the things that I feel like every other blogger is reading. So sometimes the things that I end up finding, all of our interests are overlapping right. because we're reading from the same sources. And a lot of times I just don't feel like people go to libraries or pick up books as much anymore, or as much as they should.
Right.
And so the things you find often have a much more interesting spin than
And you always I tear do. Out. You're a magazine terror outer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm poorly organized with that. So let's talk about how we organize creativity.
How we wish,
In
right.
terms of magazines, I think I'm somebody who's never been able to embrace like Pinterest or those things in terms of creating like a digital
right.
clipboard. I really prefer to actually have the magazine torn out. It means I have stacks of paper everywhere, but I kind of love stumbling onto them. It's like when you wash your jeans and you find you had a $20 bill on the back of them.
Right.
Like, I constantly find a piece of paper that's stuck under something. And then I remember, oh, I wanted to do a spin on this project.
And we thought when we got that, we got Office Space in February, and we sort of thought we would pin them up. But that hasn't really stuck as an idea. It just sort of hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I just prefer keeping them in stacks. But I do, in terms of like organizing creative materials, I think the best way to think about organizing the inspiration that you find is the better able or the more able you are to organize the other parts of your creative life, the more time you can leave for like big picture inspiration that right. happens. I think the biggest problem with inspiration is creating enough time in your daily schedule to actually be inspired. Because if your project, whether it's a blog or a product line, takes off,
no, it's true,
that time to be inspired disappears. So
well, and even I mean I spend so much time online that I even have to sometimes I write in my daily to-do list, like I write read for 1 hour, and I make myself turn off the computer and just read and look at books for 1 hour.
Yeah. So you talk about Pomodoro. I think that's a good
Oh, okay.
A good
yeah. Pomodoro. I mean, I think I discovered it from you actually. So Pomodoro is a timer.
It's free, right?
Yeah, it's free. It's online. You download it. And then basically the way it works is you write down, or this is how I use it. I write down 4 tasks that I want to spend 20, 25 or 30 minutes on. And then you get the timer and you have like 30 minutes to do this one task, write a post or do whatever. And then the bell rings and you're supposed to, wherever you are, move on to task 2.
Exactly.
And then you have
and
a break.
It kind of like shuts down your computer. Like it yeah. freezes your computer. So I think if you're someone who struggles with kind of feeling all over the place and you need to focus on a task, we love Pomodoro for that. It's free. It's like a kitchen egg timer, but shaped like a tomato, hence right. the name. And it's a really great way to focus. We also are both huge supporters of Boomerang, which mm-hmm. is a Gmail tool that lets you sort of delay the sending and receiving of emails or have something bounce back to you like a boomerang if you need it to come back to you. And I find it's a great way to like clean out your inbox really quickly,
right.
which I think a lot of us feels like it's a mental delay on mm-hmm. stuff when you look in your inbox and there's like 500 emails and you just kind of mentally shut down and feel like you'll never get anything done. Just boomerang everything
right.
to come back in a week, 2 weeks, 3 days, whatever it is. It's a really, really great tool. I think there's a free trial and then you have to pay after that, but it's really not that much money. And
right.
I would pay 10 times that to use it.
I'm a big fan also of just the regular pad and paper and pencil. I have a to-do list every single day. And when I'm doing one of these things like Pomodoro, or I'm saying, you know, I say I'm going to read for an hour. If something else pops into my head, you know, like what kind of recipes can you make with brown rice? I write that on my list, like later Google recipes and brown rice and see what mm-hmm. you can do. But I don't do it at that moment.
Yeah. Two other, well, I use a digital version of that. I use my iPhone reminders
because yeah.
it will come back and like literally make a noise that forces me to do something.
And you use Siri.
Yeah. And Siri, I use that. And then I think two other great things. If you're a blogger, using an editorial calendar, I think is incredibly mm-hmm. helpful. It lets you sort of organize what you've got coming up during the week. And it really helps your brain kind of let go of the stress of what am I going to write about? Do I have enough to write about? And then I use Hootsuite as well. I love it. It lets you schedule all your social media updates for Facebook mm-hmm. and Twitter and all that. And it really helps you organize that stuff so you don't have to be latched to your laptop all the time. So let's see. We've talked about that. We're running out of time faster than I thought. We have all these tips to share. I'm kind of panicking that we're not going to get them all out. So we're going to move fast. Those were things to organize you. I want to get in there really quickly that as much as inspiration is great, I think it's important to schedule time for an inspiration break, because sometimes I think people can flood themselves with pictures and ideas and 50 new blogs to read, and that's great. But I think what starts to happen is you feel overwhelmed. Often your inspiration start to look a lot like everybody else's because you're constantly looking at other people's work. I think it's really great to sort of designate a time where you're going to take away from work, whether you literally just stop working for a while, you go on a trip that has nothing to do with what you do. Amy's a big yoga.
I do yoga or I bike ride, something where I can just turn off my brain and I'm not thinking about design or anything related to
that. And it's difficult to do that because I think people feel like, well, I can't afford to do that right now. I'm building my business or I'm building my blog. I can't take time away from work, but it's really a very short-term decision that has a long-term effect. Right. So if this is really about maintaining sort of a sustainable business and sustainable inspiration, you've got to take these short-term breaks in order to keep yourself going long-term. So when you're talking about long-term, the biggest thing you're going to hit is a rut. And we've all hit them.
Right.
I currently exist in one right now, and I'm trying to pull myself out. And I think one of the most important things to talk about when you're talking about getting out of a rut is how to figure out collaboration. I think the most powerful way to get yourself out of a place where you don't know what to do next is to really work with somebody else, to expand your team, to just get somebody else's opinion.
Right. And everyone experiences a rut. So even if you just emailed people and were honest, hey, I love your site, I'm in a real creative rut, would you want to work together?
Exactly. Or even just, do you have any advice? I think if you don't decide to collaborate, getting some sort of support group, whether it's a local meetup group or just somebody that you connect with, you can have coffee with, those sorts of things are really crucial, because it's great to have online friends, but I think actually talking to people in person or working together on a project really kind of helps you break through that wall and look at things from somebody else's perspective. And I think another really helpful thing to do, and this is a reminder for myself and something I'm really trying to do right now, is reevaluate your place in your niche and your community and what your original core goals were. Because when you start something, I feel like you've got a good year or two of inspiration that'll kind of keep you going for a while before you feel like you've hit a wall. But sometimes when you can't figure out what to do next, the best thing to do is go back and say, okay, well, this is what I started with. These were my goals. Have I met them? Is it okay to reevaluate those and change them?
Performance evaluation. You have them if you're in a full-time job, but when you're in your creative profession, sometimes we don't do those.
Exactly. And then just like the idea of taking a creative break, embrace the idea of a trip that's dedicated to working on a concentrated project. If you're an artist, the idea of a residency is a great place, like somewhere where you can go to concentrate on a single project or to just rediscover your inspiration. Those things are incredibly crucial. And
I'm a big fan of the 15-minute walk every day, though, or just a walk. You could do that. Everyone can do that. Take a walk.
Exactly. And so before we head out, I want to leave with some ideas, because we can't get to everything. But I think if you only hear 2 seconds of today's show, these are sort of the 5 or 6 notes you want to take home with you. The most important thing for me is to stay true to yourself, your voice, and your mission, and nobody else's. It can be incredibly easy to be swayed by what you think is popular in your community. The best thing to do, I mean, all of my idols, whether it's Ina Garten from Barefoot Contessa or Martha Stewart, are people who sort of kept true to the things they're good at and only focus on those.
And also sort of maintain a list of those people who you admire, who you can sort of look to when you are having you're in a rut, and what did they do in those moments? I think that's really inspiring.
And then after that, I think an editorial or a production calendar, in addition to organizational tools, I think really setting yourself up in a place where the sort of day-to-day runnings of your business are under control and under wraps, those sorts of things are crucial to allow yourself to have time for creative thought.
And then don't be afraid of change if it doesn't feel right. I'm a big fan of if it's too hard, maybe you should just not be doing that particular aspect of it at this time. Maybe it's a sign you should move on.
Yeah, if you're in a creative rut and you're trying to push yourself to do something and it doesn't feel right, let it go. Trust your gut. And if you feel like, I was really sort of admired the fact that Joy Cho, who runs a blog called Oh Joy that a lot of us read, recently decided to sort of get rid of her writing team and just go back to basics and focus on her voice and what's important to her. And that's a really bold decision when you've been writing with the team for years. So, but I think if you trust your gut and it feels right, those are the sorts of bold decisions that kind of keep you going forward.
And then we had another one we wanted to connect with people, readers. Don't spend all your time. Grace and I sometimes do this, spend a lot of time in front of a computer, but really reaching out and make connections, whether online or in person. You can start meetups, go to events, just be a participant.
Exactly. And then the final thing to think about, and this seems sort of obvious, but I think people forget to do this because you spend a lot of time creating a project, is get the word out there. Right. I think it can seem difficult to like start a project and then you sit back and say, we're all the people who are going to come support it. But in the sea of blogs and in the sea of creative people that exist in the community that we all work in now, it's really important to be your biggest fan.
And if it feels weird to you to promote yourself, you can create like a fake online persona, you know, Sophia is promoting Amy's, you know, new blog post. She's my PR person. Oh my,
I do know a lot of people that do that.
It's much easier. Yeah.
Don't be entirely false about who you are.
True.
But if it feels more comfortable for you to sort of have like a mascot or a thing for your business, like somebody who sort of speaks on your behalf, it's totally okay to do that in the beginning. But also accept that like really getting the word out there is about believing in what you do, and it should feel easy to do, because if you love what right. you do, sharing what you do is a natural extension of that. So from Amy and I and everybody at Design yeah. Sponge, best of luck with all your creative projects, and we will see you back here on Monday at noon on heritageradionetwork.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.